This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to the Steve Carino Show on placetobenation.com. Now, here's your host, the king of old school, Steve Carino.
Welcome back. It is the Steve Carino Show, and I am your host, Steve Carino. We're coming to you live to tape from the Carino Man Boy Cave here in Emerald Isle, North Carolina. Hey, don't forget my co-host with the most, the Boston Strangler, Dan McGinn. Steve Carino Show is brought to you every week, well, sometimes, free of charge through the Place to Be Nation. But if you want to contribute, head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Carino and get one of the six Carino-inspired t-shirts. That is three Steve Carino shirts, Mr. Wrestling 3, PWF, and American Tiger shirt up at the moment. And may I stress to you, you are running out of time to get this 20th anniversary t-shirt. It's only $19.99. If you live internationally, $6.99. International shipping, that is cheap as shit. Allison Danger, former guest and Shimmer Star, is making gear. You want to look like a star? You should look like a star. Then you need Danger Designs. Email her your stuff at Allie Danger, that's A-L-L-I-D-A-N-G-E-R, at AOL.com. Yep, she's the last person using AOL. Tell her that you listen to the Steve Carino Show, and she'll give you 10% off your next order. Look at that. I even get you discounts. Buy my shirt. Go get your stuff from her. We're all good. Hey, after last week, we took a week off, you know, to let the brain relax a little bit. Let me get back into emotion. I was a little behind in some work. And we're back this week, and it really felt good to take that extra week off. You know, we've been doing weekly shows for the most part for the last 19 weeks or so, and sometimes it takes a toll. You got to understand that I do the show on Tuesday nights in my man boy cave. Usually I start around 9 p.m. and it gets tough. You're putting the baby down around 8:30. You're trying to get your shit together to do a show and try and make it as entertaining as possible, because it's hard work to be an entertainer. And let me bring in my man right now, the producer, the co-host, the Boston Strangler himself, Dan McGinn. Dan, how you doing this week?
I'm good, Steve. It's good to be back on the air. Good to plug in that microphone again. And we're going to talk a lot of stuff today. This is probably, out of all the 20 shows, this is number 20. It's our big anniversary, and this is definitely our most listener participation that we'll ever have in a show, or at least so far. And I hope for much, much more of it.
Absolutely. You know, we call this show What Ifs. You know, we're not going to have a guest this week because I really want to play this game. And I told Dan that this is a game that me and former guest Chuck LeGrand played a lot in Puerto Rico, and it's called What Ifs. And basically what we're going to do is go over old scenarios. I picked five out. I tweeted them at Steve Carino Show. I asked for your input. Some people wrote in. I need more people to write in, but I'm also going to go with the theory that you don't know how it works yet. So we're going to take a certain topic, a certain time of in the past, and we're going to play the butterfly effect. You know, everything that the butterfly touches changes everything else, and that's what these situations were made to. And we're going to have some fun with it. I think people are going to be interested to see some of my views, see where it goes, and I think you're going to end up writing back in what your thoughts were. And I got a few that, you know, were very vague, very to the point. I want your creative side. I want this to be the most interactive part of the show. We're going to do what ifs, you know, every once in a while, maybe, you know, once a month or something like that, to see how it goes. And I really want you guys to participate. Make sure you get your what ifs in. Email stevecarinoshow@gmail.com. You know, let me know what you're thinking. And I think once I explain and I get detailed and everything like that, I think we're going to really enjoy this. Now, Dan, I have an announcement, but I know you wanted to make an announcement. And considering since I jumped on the Patriots bandwagon, we won two in a row, I'm gonna let my man that really cheers on number 46 do our announcement.
So you want me to give the big announcement?
Yeah, why not?
All right. I mean, it's
your
name.
Voice is way better than mine. I really like your voice.
Oh, I get you.
I think people like it coming from you.
All right. Well, just to kind of change up the format a little bit, you see this all the time in television, radio, and now in the podcast world as well. The Steve Carino Show, with, of course, Steve's approval. This isn't a powers that be decision or anybody else's, editors, whatnot, the disembodied voice, the guy who makes the music. It's not any of their decisions. It's our decision, and ultimately it's Steve's decision, that this show is now going to go every other week. And the way it's going to work now is that it's going to kind of go hand in hand with the schedule of the Kevin Kelly Show. So 1 week you'll hear Kevin Kelly, and on, of course, on its normal night, Wednesday or Thursday, depending upon when you download. And then, of course, the Steve Carino Show will be available the following week on Friday morning. So it'll give us a chance to kind of charge the batteries and give you the best possible product every other week. And then, of course, you'll also be able to get your fix of Ring of Honor action with the Kevin Kelly Show with Justin Rosero and the different guests that they have. And hopefully, and we don't know, we do some kind of crossover planning, but you'll maybe get a little bit of everything over those 2 weeks. You'll see Kevin 1 week and then us the next. So, Steve, what do you think about all that?
Well, I'm really looking forward to the new format. Just, you know, going every week on Tuesday nights, like I was saying at the beginning of the program, it's very tough. It's very tough to, you know, come up with original stuff. Sometimes, you know, I'm on the road, I don't get a chance to prepare. Going every other week, coinciding with the Kevin Kelly Show, is going to be perfect for me. I'm really excited to be a part of it, and that's my guy, man. That's my buddy. That's my mentor, Kevin Kelly. So you'll have the Kevin Kelly Show 1 week, the Steve Carino Show the next week, and, you know, we're going to fill your minds up with useless knowledge and a lot of fun.
And, of course, you know, it's not really like, you know, it's sometimes you get a little overloaded with your podcasts and that sort of thing. You might listen to us every week, but then you try to fit in Kevin Kelly and his show's a little bit longer, and then you try to fit in some of the other great shows on Place to Be Nation. Who knows, and we're not allowed to say it, but sometimes you might even go to other places to find your podcast needs. And this just kind of will spread the love a little bit, and like you said, if you kind of look at Kevin Kelly as a much different show, which it is, they do their trending stories, and they have their kind of long all-sports talk, whereas we kind of focus more on baseball, and we have our cheap plugs and the love, and it's different stuff, but you're going to get the same great quality, and then it's just going to be a matter of, well, is this a Kevin week, or is this a Carino week? So I think it's going to be fun, and I think you know, you and I certainly will be able to just kind of have a little bit more time to get that, you know, knock out these shows and be able to, you know, be creative. And I think that What Ifs is a good start.
Oh, absolutely. And we're going to get into that in our second segment. We're going to have a lot of fun with it. Hey, now, Dan, we're coming off the heels of WWE's Night of Champions that happened in Nashville. Did you get to watch the whole show?
I did, with the crew down at Boneheads in West Warwick, and a lot of food, a lot of fun, a lot of laughs. We actually stayed the whole day there. We watched football to start, and then all day long, we all had our iPads, we did the fantasy football bit, and then the pay-per-view came on, and you know, it's funny because it was a very polarizing show. I wrote about it in the Raw recap. There were certain things that people did not like. There were certain things that kind of made you say, see, you know, this was kind of blah, it just kind of felt like watching a Raw. But there were, if you look hard enough, there actually was more good, I think, than bad in the show. The first two matches were phenomenal, and you know, I think the in-ring product certainly hasn't suffered, even though they've had a mess of injuries lately. I don't think it really suffers as far as in-ring product goes. Maybe some of the storytelling, but it has taken a hit. But gosh, there's certain matches on this card that, wow, it's a shame that somehow they're getting painted with a darker brush because people just don't like the ending.
And that's the thing. I think we're really in that cynical point where people need to relax and stop worrying about everything because, you know, it's never-ending story. Why do you need the answers all the time? if you're paying $50 for traditional TV, you're a moron. The network is $9.99 a month. It's not $9.99 to watch the pay-per-view. It's $9.99 for access for everything for the month. So say you watch it for an hour or two, you know, during the month, even on the lower end, you're definitely, you know, getting the bargain. So enjoy it. And of course it's going to lead to a Monday Night Raw, because that's where 3 million people are watching, as opposed to, you know, the couple hundred thousand that might be watching on pay-per-view. Of course the pay-per-view is going to be a setup for Raw, because that's where more people are watching. Now, I got home a little later. I had the PWS show in Hubert, North Carolina, our Legacy Cup tournament won by C.W. Anderson. Congratulations, C.W. But, you know, it's one of those things where I was watching it a little bit later. I you know, that's the great thing about the network. You can start it a little bit later and then, you know, just start from the beginning, catch up. But then you have to stay off social media because people are bitching and moaning. Oh, Super Cena and this, I can't believe this and that, and the bullshit ending. Here's what I saw. I watched an incredible tag team title match with the Usos and the Rhodes Boys, and it was phenomenal. The evolution of Cody Rhodes into Stardust is just so entertaining, so theatrical, over the top. It's greatness, and I love it. You know, Goldust is just literally doing the best work he's done in so long. And think about it, he's 46 years old, I want to say 45 years old. Just so, so good. But and then the Uso boys are, every time they get in the ring, it's better. They're the perfect opening match, just because you're going to set the stage. It's going to be so exciting. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I loved the finish. I loved the false finishes, the drama. And I think all the people did too. The second match I saw was Sheamus and Cesaro. And you followed one great match with an absolute A-plus of a match. I'm not a huge Sheamus fan, but I love his matches. I loved his series with Bad News Barrett. I'm loving this now with Cesaro. It was great. Where they lost me was the unimportance of The Miz versus Dolph Ziggler. Putting in Florida Georgia Line, who are great musicians, I love their music, but it wasn't the right time. For me, put a throwaway match in there if you're going to pump up the album of, you know, this group. They're a very big, you know, selling group in the United States and probably internationally. But it was the wrong match to do it. I hated everything about it, and it really made me like hate that feud. And that's a feud that you really want to get behind, because these guys deserve it. No matter what people think of The Miz, he can go. He can work. He does what he needs to do. He's an amazing heel. He's so annoying, so over the top. I don't think he needs Damian Sandow in his corner. I don't think Dolph Ziggler needs R-Truth, but it's okay. You know, I just think they really took the importance away. I saw Mark Henry and Rusev, it ended exactly the way I thought it would, and, you know, they're really building that kid up. I thought Mark Henry did a really good job of putting him over, just like Jack Swagger did a few weeks before. These are things that are needed, because eventually Rusev's got to get beat by Cena. And that's the way it was going. Cena's Hogan, and you got to build him up to get beat by, you know, the top guy. He doesn't have to beat everybody on the mid-card. Or no one on the mid-card's got to beat him. It's just give him good matches, get him more heat, get him to the top. That's all I watch right now. I'm going to try and get a little time maybe tomorrow to catch up on the other matches. I thought the Seth Rollins-Dean Ambrose thing was so well done. Ambrose really came into his own, but Seth Rollins, you know, a guy that I knew in Ring of Honor, and the one thing that I worried about when he had signed with the WWE was, this guy isn't the greatest talker, and I, you know, he looks good, I know he'll gain weight, but he's not the best talker. He has just gone way above anything that I could ever expect. His work was always great. His body looked good. But now he can talk, and he's now the complete package. Ambrose is just, you know, he's Piper and Punk, and he's all these different things, and Dick Slater all into one. I was, I was intrigued by it, and I want to see how far it'll go. So, Dan, give me your hits and misses with Night of Champions.
Well, I'm going to slightly disagree with you on the Miz thing. I really enjoy this angle right now with Miz and the Hollywood thing and then the stunt double thing. It might have gone a little bit overboard with Truth. You know, maybe if they debuted that a little bit later in the feud, it seemed like we saw them like on six straight shows, and it's kind of watered down the humor of it. But my theory all along during this whole thing was that Miz needs to start like an Entourage-like faction. You know, guys that kind of just hang around the Miz and kind of do his bidding. And I thought the stunt double thing was actually kind of a neat little, very creative way to get Sandow a little bit more attention. That isn't just him being a goof. He's still being a goof, but he's not dressing up like Paul Revere anymore or something like that. But that match did leave you lacking a little bit because they had to do kind of a token, hey, anything can happen. All the titles are on the line, so let's have a title change right here. And it was completely unnecessary, particularly when you consider that Ziggler just won the title back the next day on Raw. So, so that was kind of a downer at the time, considering I had a lot of high hopes going in. I was probably the only one who's a big fan of this Hollywood Miz act, but, that's one takeaway. I thought the Dean Ambrose thing was well-timed. I mean, it was a letdown that Roman Reigns had to have that emergency surgery for certain, and hopefully he makes a speedy recovery, although initial reports are he's going to be out for several months, quote-unquote. So we'll see how that goes, but I mean, it's nice to know they had somebody like Ambrose in their back pocket who was, you know, filming a movie, kind of taking some time off, and hey, this is a perfect now opportunity, ready-made storyline, and I thought the dynamic yesterday, which, of course, when we recorded, yesterday was Monday, the kind of dynamic of him and Cena both going after Rollins, it was just something different, and it kind of, maybe it's going to start to elevate, to see a guy like Ambrose at Cena's level right now is actually pretty amazing, considering the fact he's been out of action for a month. Just going down the list, I love the tag match, as you said, I love the Sheamus-Cesaro match. The guys on the reaction show had a great analogy talking about that, not an analogy so much, but that match, Cesaro basically beat the tar out of Sheamus throughout the whole thing, and Sheamus is able to pull out that one Hail Mary, that bro kick, just out of nowhere, gets the kick and gets the win. He just falls on top of Cesaro. I loved that visual, just the idea of this guy took Sheamus to the limit, and those guys always have great matches. I mean, even if they have a throwaway SmackDown match, those guys have great matches. So I had very high expectations, and they were met in that particular match. And then I guess we should talk about the ending a little bit. I mean, it was a little bit of a cluster, but I agree with you. You can't take what you see on a pay-per-view as, well, that's the conclusion of a chapter, and I don't understand it, and blah, 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 and why was Lesnar out to look like a fool, and he looks like a wuss, and blah, blah. I mean, when you watch Raw the next day and the story of now Ambrose, you know, having Rollins be a marked man, I mean, they did more for Rollins in the last couple days to boost up his character. I mean, he's now, I mean, next to Triple H, he's probably the top guy in the Authority now. And all it did was interfere in a title match at a pay-per-view. I mean, it was just incredible. I thought it was pretty cool, but I could see where there was a lot of hate being spilled around after that match.
I do too, but it's one of those things, like, you can't get all the answers, you know, they got to get to Survivor Series, then they got to get to Royal Rumble, then they got to get to WrestleMania, you know, this all is part of a plan, they know what they're doing, they're, you know, this isn't their first time, you know, running a show. I think it's great. I think that everything's going to work out for the best. A DQ finish in the main event was the only thing that I think they could have done to save both guys. But you're right. Seth Rollins is the one that looks like a star at the end of, you know, on Tuesday morning, he looks like a star. And I think that was great. I think that was the idea. So, I think it hit where it needed to hit. and then everything else took care of the rest. I liked it. I enjoy it. I didn't get to see the girls' match, even though I'm hearing that the girls' match was really good. So I'm excited. I'm excited about that, too. So hopefully tomorrow I'll get some time to check out the rest of the show. That's the great thing about the WWE Network. They beat it in your ear and they put it on T-shirts. $9.99, but come on, really. For $9.99, you get to watch the pay-per-view and get to watch it whenever you want. You know, it's not like, oh, shit, I missed stuff on Sunday. Now I got to reorder the pay-per-view and all that dumb shit. You know, you can watch it anytime. It's absolutely great. Now, the injury to Roman Reigns, and I love what you wrote on the rundown. When it rains, it pours. That was a shocker, but maybe not the worst timing for him to go out for a little bit. Him being out now for a couple months will put him really looking towards the Royal Rumble to come back. If this is your next guy, then the Royal Rumble's perfect for him.
It's perfect.
To make his return.
It's perfect, and if he is healthy by end of January or mid-January, whenever the Rumble is, it's perfect because they can. It's been used, you know. Obviously, Edge coming back from injury or Cena coming back from injury, but it's been used again and again because it is such an effective way to make a guy have a kind of dynamic return. And
it's still awesome though. When that number, you know, the music comes on and you don't expect the guy, you love it, and that's what you, it's that moment. That's what you're looking for, is those actual moments in wrestling that you're going to remember.
And he's coming off a record-setting performance. People forget about it because it was the Rumble in which Daniel Bryan didn't come back out and Bautista started and this and that and the other. But you almost kind of forget that Roman Reigns is coming off of a fantastic, if obviously a record-setting performance at the Rumble, eliminating all those guys, beating Kane's record. So if there was a guy that was tailor-made to win the Royal Rumble, I mean, a lot of people were saying that he should have won it last year. If you weren't going to give it to Bryan, you might as well have given it to the guy who eliminated 13 guys. So, I mean, it's the perfect timing, but who knows how long it'll take for him to recover from this surgery.
Yeah, that's a tough surgery, man. Here's a guy that is wrestling 5 days a week. You just never know. So, how much pain he was in, you know, because you're in pain every day as a wrestler. So he must have been in so much pain for him to finally go to the emergency center and get diagnosed and get the emergency surgery. My goodness, he went when he went. You know, what could happen if it was worse? That's what I worry about.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, if you're looking at it, it is sad that it happened now, because this is when they wanted to kind of, you know, build him up. But I guess if he does go away and then makes a huge return and wins the Rumble or wins the Chamber or does something kind of, you know, huge like that, then you set him up to have that big WrestleMania main event push that I think everybody was speculating would happen. It's what does make it suck in the long run is it's now another in this long list of long-term injuries. I mean, obviously Daniel Bryan hasn't come back since the spring. Wade, I made a comment on my recap, you know, Wade Barrett hasn't returned yet. I mean, the upper mid-card has really taken a hit, and now a couple main eventers have fallen by the wayside. It's just, you know, it's obviously nobody's fault, but right now, in a time where maybe some perception is that the company is in some down times, it's really hard to lose a stud like that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, whew, timing, man. Timing is everything.
Mm.
Now, football, week 3 happened. Patriots won. And how many others were arrested?
Since our last show? I mean,
how many from the time that we tape on Tuesday night till we go go on air Friday? I mean, this has gotten to a point where it's gotten so bad and it's really overshadowing anything that's going on in football. Now, for me, I'm not a football fan. I don't enjoy it. I don't know why I don't enjoy it. I don't shit on it because people love it and people go crazy for it. I'm a baseball guy, and it's just what I am. It doesn't... You know, mean that, you know, baseball is better. It just, it's my opinion. I love baseball, and that's what I love, and that's all I want. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, football is now getting so overshadowed by what's going on outside that it makes me not want to turn on football. It makes me not want to watch a Super Bowl. It makes me not want to see, you know, what's going on or even check the scores. And for you, you're a football fan. You were talking about, you know, getting to the bar early, watching some football, doing your thing. What do you think as a football fan about these legal issues?
It's awful. It's one of those things you just want to kind of ignore, but you can't because you can't even turn on sports talk radio. You can't turn on Sports Center. You can't turn on anything without, I mean, even I bet some of our podcasts here on the Place to Be Nation network of podcasts have been talking about it as well. It's almost becoming like the football itself is becoming secondary. You know, you need distractions like your fantasy team or your suicide pools or what have you, the gambling aspects if you participate in that sort of thing, in order to kind of really get enjoyment, because there's so many bad things going on. I tried listening back to our show a couple weeks ago and us talking about Ray Rice, and it's funny to listen back because we didn't even really know too much, you know, 2 weeks ago, and we've now learned so much more about what's happened, and videos have been revealed, and now other players are being turned in, whether it's like the backup running back in Arizona, or obviously a few stud defensive players for either Carolina and San Francisco, and it's just like, gosh, am I really trying to root for these guys? Am I rooting for the guys, or am I just rooting for the laundry? Or what am I even watching for? You know, is it for a financial gain? Is it because I have, you know, regional pride in the team that I root for? It's really difficult to be a football fan right now.
And it's such a shame because, you know, me being a baseball fan, the big scandal was steroids. And at the end of the day, like, people didn't really care. They want to see home runs, but they're going to bitch and moan anyway. But it's still good, you know? Like, they're not beating people or, you know, beating their kids or, you know, all this violence. It was, you know, they were hurting themselves. Whereas, you know, these football players are hurting other people. And I really think it gives a negative, 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 you know, reputation to a sport that really needs to. This is a time baseball to a lot of people is boring. Takes too long to get to the game and stuff like that. There's too many teams, blah, blah, blah. This is their chance, and they're not taking it. They're not taking it at all. And it's a shame. I'm totally turned off by baseball. So, oh, man. I mean, I'm not turned off by baseball. I'm turned off by football. I'm looking forward to baseball. I have to go away this weekend, and playoffs will be starting by the time I get home. And, man, the hunt for Red October starts, and I'm excited. Who's your pick right now? If the season ends today, who is your pick to go to the World Series?
Gosh, that's tough. I wanted to maybe throw in an idea to you about since neither one of our teams has a prayer, we should hitch on to somebody else's wagon, you know, and that'll be the official Steve Corino Show team that we're rooting for. But, you know, taking a look at it, I really like the offense of the Baltimore Orioles. It's just there's something about it. They're so deep, and it's funny that they could lose a guy like Manny Machado and Matt Wieters and still chug along, win the AL East by double figures.
Chris Davis, you know, he'll be out for a little bit longer.
Right, Chris Davis is out. I mean, here's a guy who hit over 50 home runs, and now he's barely hitting 200, but he gets busted for amphetamines. But, you know, this team just chugs along. The thing about it is they were a team. It's funny, there's always like this kind of elitist behavior around here in the AL East. You have the Red Sox, like, oh, we just won a championship, and we can win with, you know, also ran players and blah, blah, blah. And then the Yankees, you know, go out and spend millions and millions of dollars on guys like Teixeira and McCann and guys like that, and they don't hit for average. They don't necessarily justify the big money. They're just big names that they just throw into a lineup. And then you see a team like the Orioles who pick up scraps like, oh, well, you don't want Delmon Young? Okay, that's fine. Oh, you don't want Nelson Cruz because he might cost you a draft pick? That's okay, we'll take him. And then they put up, and then in, at least in the case of Cruz, he puts up MVP numbers, and you just think to yourself, damn, we could have had him. All we could have needed to do was sacrifice a draft pick and a one-year contract for, you know, short money. Okay, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
So I don't know. They're that my early pick right now is at least the team I'm going to follow. But gosh, you can't really look past what the Los Angeles Angels have done. I mean, they were a team that was just kind of hoping they'd get a wild card, and all of a sudden they got red hot. They overtook Oakland, and you know, maybe they're ready to make that next push.
It's going to be tough. It's a tough one to call. If it ends right now and they've been nice and quiet, I'm going with the Cardinals. The Cardinals just seem to be the most, you know, consistent of the team. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hey, while I'm thinking of it, tell everybody, because I don't know if they forgot. But Dan, tell everybody where to find the Steve Carino Show.
Well, in case you forgot after another week off, you can find the Steve Carino Show in any of the following ways by visiting placetobenation.com. Click on that Steve Carino Show banner or the PTBN podcast banner on the right-hand side. In addition, just by subscribing to the Place to Be podcast feed on your iTunes. You have iTunes. We all have iTunes. You will automatically receive the latest episodes of The Steve Carino Show. You can visit Stitcher.com to find folks over there and subscribe to the Place to Be podcast. You can download the Place to Be Nation podcast app. I had to do that again. I lost it when I upgraded to the new operating system for my iPhone. But you can get it again. It's Place to Be Nation podcast app. You go to placetobe.podbean.com/mobile on your iPhone or iPad. Be sure to also follow us on Twitter. It's at Steve Carino Show. It's at @place2bnation. And like us on Facebook at facebook.com/placetobenation. Finally, if you have questions for our final segment, if you have some what-ifs, maybe we'll use them down the road. If you have suggestions, go to stevecarinoshow@placetobenation.com for your emailing purposes. Also, stevecarinoshow@gmail.com. And, of course, tweet us at Steve Carino Show. Steve!
Ooh. Beautiful, beautiful as always. Hey, when we come back, it's time to play What Ifs. You're listening to the Steve Carino Show.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here. PlaceToBeNation.com.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant.
Sorry.
The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pav. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
Hey, we're back on this edition of the Steve Corino Show, 20th edition. I can't believe we made it that far. I think I made it 51 episodes with Rob with the Extreme Odd Couple podcast. So we're doing well. We're almost halfway to what I did before, so that's all good. Hey, now we're going to play a game called What Ifs. Now, what happens in this game is I'm going to give a certain scenario, and then I'm going to say what I thought what would happen, where, you know, and we have five different scenarios, and we're going to go over them, and we might have to break this up into two segments because some things are going to be a little long-winded about. Now, I want your opinion. This doesn't mean, like, it was going to happen or I know more than anybody else. I'm going to give some reference points, some historical facts, and basically Steve Corino's opinion. I want you to let me know what you think. You know, you can tweet us at Steve Corino Show, but when you write it down, I want more than 140 characters. I want you really to think about this, and you be the guy that play God. You know, what's going to happen or what could have happened at that time. Now, we're going to start it off with one that's probably the, you know, I gave out five what ifs. This is probably one of the ones that we're going to have to explain and go from that. Now, the first one is, what if Ole Anderson goes to work for a Vince McMahon on Black Saturday? How is wrestling different? Now, for me, I'm 41 years old. I grew up in outside Philadelphia where we had gotten on our cable station. We had gotten the WWF on our local channel. We also got Spectrum Wrestling from the Philadelphia Spectrum, which was WWF house show. We would get that once a month, and then we would also get Georgia Championship Wrestling, 6:05 every Saturday night, and I was a huge Georgia Championship Wrestling fan. Now, Black Saturday, of course, is the time when Vince McMahon took over Georgia Championship Wrestling, buying out Jack and Jerry Briscoe and Jim Barnett's shares, leaving Ole Anderson with basically nothing, coming in, taking over. And it's normally known to wrestling fans as Black Saturday. I would say like 2 or 3 months ago, I was doing some cardio. I had my wife's iPad, and it came up, or just randomly, somebody had posted that episode on YouTube. And I remember as a kid hating it, because where was Tommy Rich and where was Ted DiBiase and where was the spoiler? Where was Buzz Sawyer and the Road Warriors? I wanted to know, like, why are they being replaced with guys that I see three times a week? You know, it's funny that, like, you would complain about seeing guys three times a week, but that's how it goes. Now, Georgia Championship Wrestling was made up of shareholders, mostly Ole Anderson, who was also the booker, Jim Barnett, legendary promoter, Jack and Jerry Briscoe, who, you know, Jerry Briscoe still works for the World Wrestling Entertainment Company. So Ole and the Briscoes never got along. Ole doesn't get along with anybody. Basically, Briscoes get an offer from Vince McMahon to sell their shares, and Vince goes in and takes over the time spot for, oh, I want to say it was close to a year, but I don't even think it was that long. Now, if you read the book Sex, Lies, and Headlocks, which is such a deceiving title, it makes it look like it's an expose on the business and shit on Vince McMahon, and if you look at the artwork, I don't know who wrote it, I forget, but I just reread it, and it talks about how Vince McMahon came into the studio, asked Ole Anderson to work for him, and Ole flat out says, you know, fuck you, I'm not doing it, man. And it's just one of those things where he ends up going and getting some capital together, going to Ted Turner, wanting to be back on television. That's where World Championship Wrestling basically begins. It's, you know, they were already World Championship Wrestling on television, but it was Georgia Championship Wrestling. So Ole now creates, you know, World Championship Wrestling that goes on television on Sundays. Vince McMahon eventually sells the time slot of, you know, the WWF on TBS to Jim Crockett Promotions, who eventually merges it with World Championship Wrestling, and it becomes just World Championship Wrestling. Here's my what if. What if Ole sells out and goes with Vince McMahon? I want you to think about that for a second. Ole Anderson, now the last remaining shareholder in Georgia Championship Wrestling decides to go with Vince. What happens? Now, we know that Vince goes to Mid-South and with Bill Watts and they put it on, but, you know, he wasn't happy with that show. Does the WWF ever sell that time slot to Jim Crockett Promotions? I'm going to say no, because at the time, Ole Anderson, who has worked with Ted Turner, and this was when Ted Turner was involved more in the day-to-day operations at WTBS, Ole had an in with Ted Turner. He could go in and complain that Ted Turner knew who Ole was. Vince McMahon, Ted Turner was New York. So now Ole doesn't have that show, so what is Jim Crockett going to buy? He's not going to be able to buy the towns because basically Ole has closed up shop. Here's my theory. If Ole Anderson goes to work for Vince McMahon on Black Saturday in 1984, eventually Ted Turner gets tired of Vince McMahon and cancels wrestling off of TBS in 1985, not allowing Jim Crockett to expand the NWA the way he wanted to. I'm going to go one further. WrestleMania doesn't happen until 1987. Because if you do your homework, basically the money that they spent, Jim Crockett Promotions spent to pay Vince McMahon for that time slot, was the money that he needed to finance WrestleMania 1 in 1985. So now there's no wrestling on TBS. Jim Crockett doesn't give Vince McMahon $1 million. Vince McMahon now has to rely more on the Rock and Wrestling Connection as long as he can to build that revenue up. And we might not see WrestleMania until 1987. Dan, give me some input. What do you think?
I like that theory a lot. I question whether or not Ole and Vince would get along in the long run. Based on what everybody says about Ole, he wasn't really the easiest person to work alongside with. But then again, Vince has worked with a lot of people that I'm sure he had lots of disagreements with. But I like where you're going here. I mean, can you imagine if there was? I mean, 85 was always such this big boom with MTV and Hulk Hogan and everything. Like, can you just imagine if it was kind of delayed? I mean, you said 86, but what if it was delayed even further? You know.
Absolutely. It's just, isn't it crazy how one situation can affect so many?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure we'll unravel a lot of those possibilities with each one of these that we do. You know, it seems like just such a simple question. But yeah, what if somebody else did this? Or what if somebody worked here instead of here? It does open up a lot of possibilities.
Absolutely. And that's the crazy thing about these what ifs. You know, it's not, oh, he just goes to work for him and then, you know, they have a falling out in a year. It goes to the point where it's like, oh shit, you know, this really could have went bad, and you know, and this could have caused this and this and this and this. So I really that's what I want. This is the opinions I want from our fans. I really want you to think before you email us. I want you to give your opinion, where this is going to go. SteveCarinoShow@gmail.com. Send them in. We're going to read them. The next one I have here is, and one of the reasons I'm going like this, I'm going to go with the ones that we really didn't get any comments about. Of course, later on when we talk about Hulk Hogan joining the NWO and Magnum TA's car accident, well, this is where, you know, we're going to really have some fun. I think we're really going to have some fun with it. Okay, number two. What if Super Clash 3 is a success? Now, for everybody that's watching, it might be a little younger. Super Clash 3 was a joint show basically sponsored by the AWA and also with World Class Championship Wrestling and the Powerful Women of Wrestling and the Memphis CWA, which is basically Jerry Lawler. It was an utter disaster. It was held on December 13th, 1988 from the UIC Pavilion in Chicago, Illinois. Now, I'm going to run down the card real quick. this card is amazing. Like, I love this card, but it was a big flop. Here's the matches. Chavo, Mondo, and Hector Guerrero defeat Cactus Jack and the Rock and Roll RPMs, who were Mike Davis and Tommy Lane, in 6:35. Eric Emery defeats Jeff Jarrett to win the World Class Championship Wrestling Light Heavyweight Championship. Jimmy Boogie Woogie Man Valiant defeats Wayne the Train Bloom in 24 seconds. Iceman King Parsons defeats Brickhouse Brown. The Top Guns, Ricky Rice and Derek Dukes, with Wendy Richter, defeat Bad Company, who were Paul Diamond, Pat Tanaka, and Medusa Michelli, with manager Diamond Dallas Page. Greg Gagne defeats Ron Garvin for the AWA International Television title. Then we have Polly the Syrian Terrorist wins the Lingerie Battle Royal. Let's forget that one. Sergeant Slaughter defeats Colonel DeBeers in a boot camp match. After the match, the Iron Sheik attacks Slaughter. The Samoan SWAT team, Samu and Fatu. Everybody knows Fatu ends up becoming Rikishi, and ends up, you know, being part of the, you know, he gave the sperm, of course, for the Usos. Defeats Michael Hayes and Steve Do It to a Cox. Wahoo McDaniels defeats Manny Fernandez in an Indian strap match. AWA World Heavyweight Champion Jerry the King Lawler defeats World Class Heavyweight Champion Kerry Von Erich in a title unification match, which was a match stopped by Von Erich's excessive bleeding. And then, for some reason, the main event, the Rock and Roll Express, Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson, fight the Stud Stable to a double disqualification. Those are the matches. But it only drew 1,672 people. And this basically was the last of the AWA. You know, Vern Gagne didn't make enough money to pay all the boys. Jerry Lawler and Jerry, who ran Memphis, end up buying out World Class Championship Wrestling. Now, here's my theory. Here's my what if. What if the attendance is 16,720 and buy rates are moderate? I'm thinking here, you have Lawler, Von Erich, Wahoo, Fernandez, Samoan SWAT team. You have yourself a great chance to be a competitor to not only the NWA, but to the WWF. You have now groups together, you know, headed by Vern Gagne, maybe booked by Jerry Jarrett. But now you have groups based in Minneapolis, Memphis, and Dallas, Texas. Close your eyes and do that map. You're coming down the center of the United States. These three companies merge as one. Now they become a powerhouse in the middle and now a player on pay-per-view television. What happens? Does Jerry Lawler continue to, you know, bring more respect to the title that they thought was dead? Do veterans, Valiant, who was just off the NWA, let me see, Wahoo McDaniels, Manny Fernandez, right off the WWF, Sergeant Slaughter, more of a, you know, a WWF name, the Iron Sheik, former WWF World Heavyweight Champion. What happens? Here's what I think. I think Lawler gets exposed as a big fish in a small pond, which he always has been. And, you know, it sounds like I'm knocking Lawler, but Lawler was that regional type wrestler. He was the king of Memphis, and that's where he was good at. I don't know why Super Clash 3 didn't sell out. Maybe they should have put it in Memphis, or maybe they should have put it in Dallas, or maybe they should have put it in Minneapolis. But there was a time when Chicago was such a great wrestling city for both the AWA and the NWA. Now, for all you wrestling nerds like me, the year before at Starrcade 87, basically the NWA burned that town by not giving the Road Warriors the NWA World Tag Team titles, doing the dusty finish with Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson, really hurting the town. I'm seeing here that this just puts a Band-Aid over the wound. Byrne didn't want to evolve in today's terms. Jerry Jarrett was a he knew Tennessee. He did great in Tennessee. He did okay in Georgia when he booked for Georgia Championship Wrestling, but he knew Tennessee. He was going to try and, you know, build his way into Texas, but you saw that didn't last very long. Maybe 3 years before he sold out. And I think you're just putting off the inevitable, but maybe you're seeing a last little breath of, you know, the WWF going, you know what, let's raid the talent. And you go back to the matches that I gave you. Only Ronnie Garvin went to the WWF right away. Eventually, you'll see Kerry Von Erich as the Texas Tornado, Jeff Jarrett, Cactus Jack. But I see the AWA doing okay for a little bit, but then the cherry picking happens. A Chavo Mondo, Hector Guerrero become a Mexican tag team in the WWF, maybe first Los Matadores, right? Crazy as it may seem. Maybe Wayne Bloom, who ends up going to the WWF as one of the Beverly Brothers, they find a gimmick for him before the whole Destruction Crew thing happened. The Samoan SWAT team were hot. They were great. They end up going to the NWA and becoming the Wild Samoans. Why they weren't the SST, I'll never know. Maybe Michael Hayes takes over the book, and you see what he's done with the things that he's done in the WWE. Now, let me give you less than a year or a year and a half later, Super Clash 4 was held in St. Paul Civic Center, St. Paul, Minnesota, on April 8th, 1990. I'm going to give you this card, and there's going to be a reason I give you this card. It's going to be the attendance. This is the card for Super Clash 4. Jake the Milkman Milliman pins Todd Becker. The Texas Hangman defeat Brad Reagans and DJ Peterson. Baron Von Raschke, subbing for the no-showing Junkyard Dog, defeats Colonel De Beers by countout. Tully Blanchard defeats Tommy Jammer. John Nord defeats Coquina Maximus, who ends up becoming a Yokozuna. Larry Zbysko defeats Mr. Saito for the AWA World Heavyweight title and regains it. And in the main event, the Trooper, who ends up becoming the Patriot, and Paul Diamond defeat the Destruction Crew, Mike Enos and Wayne Bloom. That show drew 2,000 people. 2,000. So that card, a year and a half after this huge card in Chicago, draw 328 more people. Is that crazy? What are you thinking?
I read a little note, too, on the Wikipedia page for Super Clash 4, which I didn't even know existed. It happened on my birthday in 1990, incidentally. Thank you. I guess it answers one question that I always had, is what happened to Tully Blanchard when he was busted for coke just before the 1989 Survivor Series, which incidentally was the first pay-per-view that I ever was allowed to order. But the note that I read was there were no TV cameras present for this event. Super Clash 3 was supposed to be their coming out. This is like their attack on WWF, even maybe to a lesser extent WCW. Like, hey, we're players in this too. And it didn't work out. And then they're basically doing a 2,000 guest house show the following year. And it looks like it was mostly just AWA this time around because there was too many cooks in the kitchen in 88. But yeah, it's funny because like 88 December they were competing against Starrcade basically, weren't they? And that's when Starrcade was still pretty hot in the
yes.
late 80s, right? Clash of Champions was there, I guess. WWF had, you know, obviously Survivor Series was off and running. There was a lot of competition, but looking back at it, I mean, who knows? That's a lot of the country that they basically had their hand in. Looking at it geographically, if you looked at WWF, yes, they marketed like they were a worldwide company, but they were mainly a Northeast company, and WCW was a, you know, Mid-Atlantic, Southern company. So, you know, there might have been a piece of the pie, but those guys, you know, particularly Vern, you hear all this stuff, they weren't willing to evolve into what Vince was trying to make the product become.
Absolutely, and that's the thing is, for me, Vince McMahon knew that shit was changing. And now cable television was taking over. And, you know, and what ifs that we get into later on is going to, you know, go from there. But it's just one of those things where it's like he saw that wrestling and life was going national. He did something that everybody else would have ended up doing. And that's a what if that we're going to be talking about in the future. What if it wasn't Vince McMahon and it was somebody else? Okay. And another what if for the future. What if it's not Dave Meltzer who does the first real in-depth, you know, kayfabe sheet, and it's somebody that hates wrestling? Does wrestling, you know, kind of die with the, you know, people becoming adults and finding out that it's work? Those are the ones that we're going to do in the future. Just to give a little thing here, a couple people have sent in their what ifs. Scott Reeves, who I always love. Scott Reeves is a very big supporter of not only our show, but he's also a supporter of Rob Dimensions, and he really does a great job, always helps out Rob Dimension with the Kickstarter projects for his movies. Real good guy. He had thrown this one in. What if Hulk Hogan never became a wrestler? Would wrestling have ever made it as big as it did? Do you think anyone else could have played that role? Interesting, right? Very, very interesting. Justin DiVarguglio sends in, what if the curtain call never happened and Triple H won the King of the Ring in 1996 instead of Stone Cold? Amazing. Justin Pratt, what if Bret Hart wasn't forced to retire due to injury? I mean, these are the things that you're like, holy shit, these are great. Eric Ells, I'm sorry if I'm saying that wrong. What if Taz and the Dudleys never left ECW? Dennis Nunez, what if WCW had won the Monday Night Wars? Anthony Brennan, what if Hulk Hogan had returned to the WWF at the start of Austin's big run as he was rumored to be negotiating? These are some crazy what ifs, right? So you're getting it. Right now we're going to keep playing the game what we're doing. But I'm joined here by my wife. Hello, beautiful. How are you? We're playing what ifs game. Did you see the baby? You gonna get a bed? Oh yeah. For those of you listening, my wife just gave me a nice kiss.
Aww.
Okay, scenario number three. What if WCW and ECW survived in 2001? And I also threw in here, and Giant Baba doesn't die in 1999. What happens? Now, the reason I threw Giant Baba in there, dying in 1999, is his death really changed the landscape of Japanese professional wrestling. For years, you basically had WCW. I'm sorry, in Japan, it was All Japan, New Japan. You know, you had Frontier Martial Arts, FMW. You had your little outlaw promotions, but it was a two-party system, Baba and Inoki. Once Baba died, it is, you know, bad. It's bad because everybody's starting their own company. Mood is jumping. Hashimoto's jumping. We got ourselves chaos. But it also creates a lot of places for guys to work in a short term. Now, WCW and ECW survive. Somehow, they make it. How is wrestling different? I believe that ECW ends up having to change their format and philosophy. It's a different world that in 2001 that it is now. We're worried about concussions. We don't really like bloodletting. These guys that are there in 2001 are going to get older, they're going to get slower, and they're going to get beat up more. I believe that we see ECW turning into more of an ROH style, thus having no need for ROH, because Rob Feinstein, Gabe Sapolsky, Doug Gentry end up working full-time for ECW. Maybe Gabe becomes Paul Heyman's assistant. I don't know. This is a scenario that I like to hear. You know, I was there at the end. Rhino was the ECW World Heavyweight Champion. Danny and Roadkill were World Tag Team Champions. I was told on that last night that myself and Justin Credible would be beating Dorian and Roadkill very quickly for those tag belts. C.W. Anderson was poised to win the ECW World Television title. So going into, you know, 2001, now you finally get Van Dam Chase and Rhino for the title. You get C.W. Anderson, who's going to work with Tajiri and Super Crazy, and eventually a Low-Ki coming in. I know Low-Ki was about to come in to ECW. You have all these guys. WCW, what happens? Do you think that in today's world we have WWE, TNA, and ROH? Here's my thing. I believe that we almost get a little bit of the same. WCW becomes more of TNA. They have the talent, but they just don't have the writer that gets them over the top. ECW becomes ROH. Maybe losing that TNN spot, they get on broadcast television. And here, in 2014, Bobby Lashley is the WCW World Heavyweight Champion. Jay Briscoe is the ECW World Heavyweight Champion. We have the same rosters in TNA and ROH, but the names are WCW and ECW. What do you think, Dan?
You know, I look at it kind of from a different perspective. I think when you have more companies like that, eventually, you know, the war will continue. So you would think that there'd be some guys jumping. So if you take, if you think of like people that maybe kind of got maybe could have got disenchanted or disenfranchised rather by how they were treated in WWE, well, maybe they would have jumped over once again. I mean, not necessarily a guy like Jericho, even though some people say guys like Jericho and RVD and others didn't get a fair shake because guys like Triple H were kind of dominating. And then eventually when Cena and Orton, and actually before that, Lesnar kind of took the crown. You know, so you could have potentially seen guys who were WWE cornerstones decide, hey, you know what? Screw this. I mean, obviously they're going in a different direction. Why don't I go and make a payday at ECW or WCW? And I actually, getting back to your point about ECW, who knows what would have happened, but if things went according to how they have as far as society goes and our, you know, understanding of concussions and that sort of thing, I wonder if ECW would have survived. I mean, let's say, all things being equal, they had like a financial backer or they got onto a bigger network or something of that sort. I think eventually they would have had to have changed their ways and been, maybe if they wanted to be an alternative, maybe they were going to be like an ROH, like small venues, intimate settings, that sort of thing, but maybe toning down the violence. And if you tone down the violence in something called ECW, what kind of product do you actually have that you're trying to sell besides perhaps, you know, going for maybe we're the work rate group? You know, they want to put on their shows and shoot off fireworks. We're the guys that actually go and put on good wrestling matches. Maybe then I could see ECW surviving past what, you know, basic, you know, into the next millennium and there and so on and so forth.
Absolutely. It's just weird that, like, you know, how wrestling has evolved. I just believe that, you know, WCW is TNA, ECW is ROH, and that's where they have to go. And knowing Paul the way I do, he would have made the extreme mean, like, extreme in-ring action. Doesn't mean, like, hardcore and stuff like that. So, yeah, I fully believe that we would have got something totally different. And but with the same name. That's what I really love. Okay, one more before we take a quick break here. We're going to go up here, and it says, what if Hulk Hogan does not join the NWO? Now, for everybody that's watched over the years, in 1996, wrestling takes a huge turn when Hulk Hogan, babyface for over a decade, turns heel, joins with Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. They become the New World Order, and business skyrockets. The boom has happened. Now, if you had watched my Old School with Kevin Sullivan, you would see that Kevin Sullivan states that, like, he had to do everything he could not to let anybody talk to Hulk Hogan and change his mind because Hogan's manager, and we're not talking Jimmy Hart, we're talking his, like, agent, didn't want him to do it. You know, there were people inside WCW that were in his ear saying, don't do it, don't do it. And he ends up doing it, and business is great, and he, you know, reinvents himself again. what if somebody does get to Hogan? And he says that it's not going to happen. This is what a young person named Pawan Guman, and I'm sorry I got your name wrong. I have my glasses on, but I still can't. This is what he wrote. Sting led NWO instead of Hulk Hogan could have been interesting. A bitter Sting, loyal to WCW for many years, yet consistently being thrown aside in favor of whatever flavor of the month the Turner managed to sign away from Titan. Finally snaps, bringing Hall and Nash's mercenaries to get revenge against the people who have wronged him. Wouldn't have the mainstream appeal or long-term draw that the actual NWO had, but it would have made a ton more sense and given us an interesting moment. Of course, Hogan would have had the legs cut out from under. Of course, Hogan would have had the legs cut out from the angle within 2 months when he realizes he's not the star of it, and it would have just turned into another Dungeon of Doom, a heel stable that only exists to throw warm bodies at the ever-dominant Hogan. Sting would have flipped back face it with ease and probably feuded with Hall and Nash before being stuck with Flair again as WCW struggled to find a direction. Bottom line is NWO would have never been as big as it was without Hogan. Hogan was someone you never thought would turn heel when it happened. Change wrestling. Thanks for reading. This guy hits the nail on the head. I believe the third member of the NWO could not have been anybody but Hulk Hogan. Maybe Bret Hart? Okay, because I'm going by, you know, who was hot in WWF at the time. Shawn Michaels was the WWF champion coming out of WrestleMania that year. Bret had taken off. Bret comes in, it becomes Bret, Hall, and Nash. I don't think it draws as well. Bret was always, I think, more of a stronger babyface than he was a heel. Hall and Nash were really great at what they did, but Hogan was the glue. He allowed Hall and Nash to be able to, you know, as much as they want to say they were leaders, to be supporting players and come out of their shell. Kevin Nash wasn't Diesel. Scott Hall wasn't Razor Ramon. They did what they needed to do, and they couldn't be themselves that people thought that they were cool. If Bret Hart is that guy, I don't think they get that chance. And Pawan, I'm sorry I'm saying it wrong, hits the nail right on the head. Not that a Hogan would have cut the legs out of it, but the box office would be telling you that it's not drawing. We would have probably got Hogan Hart at Starrcade in 1986, and it would have been good and everything like that. Hogan up, and now for 1997, shit, we're in trouble. Maybe guys aren't jumping as much to WCW because business isn't so good, and, you know, Bischoff isn't handing out the guarantees that he was after the NWO exploded.
Can I throw two other prospects?
Absolutely.
For this? Okay, so Hogan's still doing his Hogan thing, and then you hear that he was also kind of starting to get booed or stale at this point. But with that being said, he's still doing his thing. I'll submit two names for you. If not Bret Hart, what about one of these two? Randy Savage or Shawn Michaels?
See, to me, Shawn Michaels was the WWF champion. It's what he always wanted to be. I believe that even at his biggest problems, he still was that guy that believed that he could be the WWF champion, and that's all he ever wanted to be. I don't think he would have been the guy that jumped. Randy Savage, to me, in 1996, he had already been an announcer for WWF. He was WCW champion for a while, but he wasn't the glue. He wasn't the glue. They needed somebody that was over the top, and I think the only guy that could have really ever done it was Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, and mainstream, I mean, obviously, Hogan had been bad before. I mean, it had to happen, but not necessarily since he went and blew up with, you know, Vince and the Hulkamania thing and Rock and Wrestling. So to see Hulk Hogan as a bad guy was something that no one ever thought they would ever see. Whereas Randy Savage, for a good chunk of his time, you remembered when you were growing up, like, oh, he was kind of a... he was a jerk to Elizabeth, and he, you know, he broke up the Mega Powers, and he hung around with Sherry, and you know, until he got bit by that snake. Well, actually, until he reconnected with Elizabeth and then got bit by the snake, you know, you really didn't really find much love for a guy like Randy Savage. So you could kind of see, oh, well, that's just Randy being Randy. Now he's turning on us again. The thing I would say about Shawn Michaels is say Shawn Michaels is, and this is what if, you know, that's what we're playing. Shawn Michaels, let's say he's kind of upset with the whole idea of the over-the-top cartoon characters and fighting pig farmers and this and that and the other thing. Yeah, he has the belt, but he's not really respected, and because he's fighting these over-the-top characters, his best buds just go off to greener pastures with a lighter schedule and, you know, but big time money, and he sees the grass being greener and then decides, you know what, Vince, this has been fun, but I'm going to go down south, and comes over, and at Bash at the Beach, he super kicks Sting or whoever, and then next thing you know, oh my gosh, not only is Shawn Michaels here, but he's an outsider too, and he's now in the NWO. I just see it as a possibility that, oh, okay, I could see that working. But then again, Hulk Hogan is certainly, even at this point in 1996, Hulk Hogan is a much bigger name than Shawn Michaels was at this point. It's just a thought that I had going through my mind if you had the click factor in 1996 in WCW.
Yeah, it's perfect, and that's the thing. These what-ifs really, really make you think. It's great. Hey, before we go to commercial, because there's no wrong answer. Before we go to commercial, I wanted to get back to the WCW, ECW Giant Baba thing. Cameron Vines from North Carolina sent this in. He says, I believe that WCW was doomed. Eric Bischoff, with the help of Fusion Media, had made a bid to purchase the company, but Turner Broadcasting decided to cancel WCW programming. Bischoff backed out then because it didn't make sense for him to, from a business standpoint. They were losing money. They were losing their fan base. They were losing their television deal. Someone else who knew what they were doing bought the company. I can't see them being more than what is TNA today, a wrestling company on television that proves that no real competition is to the top dog. It's hard to say what would have happened to ECW had it survived in 2001. I believe it could have remained in business today, but I see it being something totally entirely different. How much of the talent would have truly remained faithful with all the late payments and such that Heyman was becoming famous for? I could see ECW becoming what ROH is now, regardless of giving independent talent more exposure. I also see them being purchased by the WWF eventually and being used for developmental. Obviously, had WCW and ECW had not been purchased, we would have had to been subjected to that horrible mismanaged invasion storyline. Talents such as Goldberg, Booker T, Diamond Dallas Page, Rob Van Dam, Tommy Dreamer, and others may have never worked for the WWF. I doubt ROH or TNA would exist. ROH was founded by Gabe Sapolsky and Rob Feinstein primarily because of ECW folding. Likewise, TNA was founded because of the Jarretts. By the Jarretts because WCW went out of business. The entire landscape of wrestling in the United States would be much different. Now going to Baba. Had Baba not succumbed to colon cancer in 1999, a few things would have been different. Misawa would have never assumed control of the company. This means that he would have never been voted out in office in 2000, and the conflict between Misawa and Baba would have never happened. However, whether Misawa would still lead an exodus or not is hard to decide on. Many of the wrestlers were loyal to Giant Baba, but not his wife. That is why they had no problem following Misawa out of All Japan. Misawa wanted to do things in a modern style. However, it is entirely possible that Noah, under a different name perhaps, could still have been formed, but it probably would not have been such a massive exodus. Thus, All Japan would not have struggled and made decisions Giant Baba would have been against. Tenryu would not have returned to All Japan in 2000 because Giant Baba would not let him come back just as he swore. It is very unlikely that All Japan, New Japan War storyline, and other interpromotional ventures would have taken place because of Baba's unwillingness to work with other promotions. Consequently, Keiji Muto would have not gained control of Baba family stock. All Japan would have more likely not lost their television or taken heavy financial blows. Cameron Vines is a genius. I agree with absolutely everything that he wrote. And when we come back, we have a few more what ifs. You're listening. But the movement is words. Serve words with nerve embedded. I said it word. Damn, you nerd, man. You heard. Coming from the town of Illy, and alleys are full of fillies and rallies. Suckers get silly and sally. Them found in alleys and rallies.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the big four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island, and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Richard and the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richer and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
And now, time for some Twitter Q&A and a little bit of love with the King of Old School and Dan, too, on the Steve Corino Show. King, take it away.
Hey, we're back on our special What Ifs episode of the Steve Corino Show. We've gotten into some great ones. I really had fun reading some of the comments and your what ifs and everything like that. Hey, I want you to keep them coming at Steve Corino Show. We'll eventually get to them. But, you know, we're playing this game. We're really enjoying it right now. So keep that up. But I want, for the ones that I gave you, I want you to write in SteveCorinoShow@gmail.com. I want you to, you know, really think about it and do your best to come up with ones on your own, or the ones that I give you, really give me, you know, your thoughts and that. And we've gotten so many great ones here. Let me see here. Trying to see where I had. We had a couple more people write in last minute. Kevin Bowers, he had written in, what if Daniel Bryan doesn't get hurt and CM Punk doesn't walk out? How different would the landscape of the WWE be right now? Interesting, right? And this is what makes this game so much fun. Mark Claire writes, what if Stone Cold Steve Austin stayed healthy and active as a wrestler until, say, 2010? Brilliant. I mean, this is how this game works, and it's so much fun because, you know, we do it. You know, we sit there and we go, okay, like, what happens here? Or what happens here? And like I said, there's no wrong answers. The more detailed that you could get into, is it the better it's going to be. In fact, we only have one more what if, and it's my favorite what if. And my what if is, what if Magnum TA doesn't get into the car accident in 1986? How is wrestling different? What I'm going to say is going to blow your mind. It is going to blow your mind so much that I had to take a sip of iced tea that you're going to hear. Now, for our fans that don't remember or are too young, Magnum TA was the next big babyface of the NWA. Looked good. He had such a great, you know, supporting cast of heels that, you know, could make him look good or, you know, wrestle him, and he had so many guys to work with. I am excited, you know, to talk about this. Magnum TA gets into a car accident in October of 1986. Now, what happens is Dusty Rhodes is thinking. He is the booker, and he's got to make a decision. He makes a decision to turn Nikita Koloff babyface, who's one of his hottest heels and is the U.S. Heavyweight Champion, and ends up going into Starrcade 86 with Nikita Koloff versus Ric Flair for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship as the main event. Now, Magnum TA in 1986 had just come off an amazing best of seven series over the U.S. title with Nikita Koloff. He was the next guy. He was doing a quick feud with Jimmy Garvin, and it was time to chase Flair into November, which is Starrcade time. Here is my thought. Now, Magnum TA wrestles Ric Flair. He then does not win the championship at Starrcade, which everybody swears, oh, he's going to get the belt. I don't think he wins the belt at Starrcade. I think it's just the beginning of Flair Magnum. I believe that Flair eventually drops the NWA World Championship to Magnum TA during the Great American Bash of 1987. Wild, huh? Let's keep going. In 1987, huh?
I don't know if Basil could wait that long for Magnum TA to win the title. I think he probably would have wanted it a lot sooner than that.
Yeah. Well, now in real life, 1987 comes, in September 1987. Ronnie Garvin defeats Ric Flair for the NWA World Championship, has the title for 2 months, goes into Starrcade 87 the champion. I believe Magnum TA now goes into Starrcade 87 as the champion. Flair the challenger. Now, what people may forget is when Magnum TA went down, not only did Dusty have to replace him with Nikita Koloff, he also brought Barry Windham back to the NWA from Florida to basically take over that number two, number three babyface role. Now, if Magnum doesn't get into the car accident, I believe a couple things happen here. I believe Dusty finally passes the torch. Magnum TA's number one babyface. Dusty's two eventually drops down. Magnum goes on, wins the title, only has one reign. And that's all he needed at the time. You don't get to see Barry Windham back in the NWA yet. But you also don't get the title reign of Ronnie Garvin. Now, I see Barry Windham coming in later in 1987 to become one of the Four Horsemen. Now, in 86, we got Luger at the end. He becomes a Horseman in 87. He's replaced by Barry Windham in April of 88. I believe this occurs now at Starrcade 87. I believe we get a Magnum TA and Ric Flair rematch at Starrcade 87. And then we get Barry Windham and Dusty Rhodes versus Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, where Barry Windham, making his big return, turns against Big Dust. Oh, it's amazing, right? But go one step further. Maybe Magnum TA wins the belt at the Great American Bash, and it's not Flair that gets the title shot at Starrcade. It's Nikita Koloff, who still ends up being a heel. Ooh. Starrcade 87, you know, Luger is a babyface by now. You know, now it's Luger and Dusty and Magnum fighting the Horsemen or fighting the Koloffs. I don't think Nikita Koloff turns babyface until 1989, 1990. Craziness. Let's go one step further. The NWA at the time with Magnum TA. Magnum TA was everything that was country. He was country music. They even played country music concerts at the Great American Bash Series in 1986, where the WWF and Hulk Hogan was rock and roll, the Rock and Wrestling Connection, Cyndi Lauper and Billy Squire and all these guys. This is the two differences. Now, what, and Dan, I'm going to ask you this question out loud, but I want fans to think about this. What do you associate with the South when it comes to sports?
Like college football?
No, go further. NASCAR.
Oh, right, of course.
So now Jim Crockett Promotions hooks up with NASCAR. Now it's country. NWA is country. WWF is rock and roll. 1987 occurs. Magnum TA's there. Business is good. The oil shortage in Louisiana happens. And business is so good because they're not competing against the WWF. They're coexisting because it's apples, oranges. It's Coke and Pepsi. It's rock and roll and it's country. Jim Crockett Promotions does not buy Bill Watts and UWF out. They end up folding. Maybe the NWA takes over some New Orleans, Omaha, Tulsa, maybe some Texas towns and stuff like that, with Magnum TA as the centerpiece babyface. Maybe not the world champion, but the centerpiece babyface. Go back to who was in the UWF roster that went to the NWA at the time, and you have Dr. S.D. Williams, the Fabulous Freebirds. You have, we're talking 1987. You're talking Terry Taylor. You're talking Eddie Gilbert. You're talking Sting. You're talking Victory and Tatum, but they end up going to Texas. Another guy that was in Texas at this time in 1987 was a wrestler named the Dingo Warrior. Now, think about this. NWA's country. WWF is rock and roll. Who isn't needed now in the NWA?
Well,
Dan?
Sting.
Bingo. Sting isn't needed, but you see this kid with so much potential and so much charisma. I believe that if Magnum TA doesn't get into the car accident in 1986, in 1987, this young, green, well-built, good-looking kid from California goes to the WWF with face paint, with the yell, the scream, the blonde hair. I believe that Vince McMahon makes Sting the Ultimate Warrior.
And with Sting now as the new warrior in WWF, the Dingo Warrior now finds himself...
The Dingo Warrior becomes Mason Ryan. Or Akeem Albrecht. He becomes exposed because he can't do the matches that Sting can. I believe that Vince puts all his money behind Sting. I believe Sting, as the Ultimate Warrior, gets the title shot in 1990 against Hulk Hogan in Toronto, and the torch is passed, and you don't get any of the problems that came with Jim Hellwig as you do with Steve Borden.
No, he's if he was nothing if not loyal, and he certainly wasn't flaky in any way as far as just, you know, walking out or the no-shows, or at least as far as we know. I mean, he stayed with WCW until the very end, fought the last match on Nitro, and then was extremely loyal, even when times were horrific, at TNA. So... Yeah, I mean, it might have been a completely different animal. I mean, you're really talking about now another potential, you know, another Hall of Fame career, just in a much different environment. Sting now with Vince, and then Magnum still down there with, what eventually became, in your scenario, what was basically WCW, but it could be called something completely different. But I have never heard that before.
Right? Isn't that crazy how that all switched? Maybe Nikita goes to the WWF and becomes a supervillain. You know, Russia and, you know, and the U.S. still hate each other. It's just so many things. I believe, like, you know, the shit that Dusty Rhodes gets about not deep pushing himself when he needed to was, I think he was ready to in 1986. He primed Magnum TA up. I mean, he recruited Magnum TA to the NWA. He had him ready. When that happened, oh shit, I can only depend on myself. Okay, here comes Barry Windham. Here comes Lex Luger. But it's just one of those things that Luger never really had the charisma. And when he did have charisma, it came off phony. You know, whereas Magnum, he was a country boy from Norfolk, Virginia, drove Harley Davidsons and had his Tom Selleck mustache. He could relate to the country people.
Could you imagine having to choose between a potential Hulk Hogan versus Sting main event at a WrestleMania versus a Magnum versus Ric Flair main event at like a Clash or a big event with a competing company? I mean, the winners in all this would be the wrestling fans having to, you know, wow, where do I go? Where do I spend my money next?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, does Hogan ever make it to the NWA? Because think about it, they're going to stay country music. They're hanging out with NASCAR. They're on TBS and TNT, and they're on different nights, and it's almost like they could give two shits what Vince McMahon does, and Vince McMahon gives two shits what they do. They find somebody that's left in what was the shamble territories. If he's a rock and roll guy, he's going to New York. If he looks like a country guy, he's going to Charlotte. And it becomes a two-party system for a long time. Think about it. NASCAR really didn't get popular until the 90s, like nationwide. You know, maybe there's a boom with the NWA just because of the tie-in with Nashville or with NASCAR. What do you think?
It's a very intriguing scenario. It's very unfortunate, obviously. I think we were talking off air. I mean, you watch several different of these pay-per-views, the DVDs and the documentaries, and so many guys, whether it's Dusty or even, you know, WWE guys, you know, Triple H, they always talk about Magnum TA being the next big thing. There's nobody that ever says, well, you know, he was just a guy and he was a regional guy and he never really was going to make it big. Everybody always talked about this guy was going to be our Hulk Hogan, or, you know, the alternative to what WWF was producing at the time. And it's just such a shame. You want to talk about real, I mean, obviously there's stuff like the Von Erichs and, you know, various other wrestling tragedies, but this one, even though, I mean, Magnum has lived a nice life, it really, who knows what might have happened if you know, he didn't get into that accident.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, what could have been? It's a what if, and it's one of those what ifs that is such a, it has such a crazy, you know, man, it could have gone here, could have gone there. I love it, and that's what I want. I want you to analyze what I said, call me on bullshit, because everything, it could be all bullshit. You know, I don't know. I don't have any inside track. It's stuff that, you know, myself and myself and Chuck Guillotine Legrand, we really took a, you know, our time and would think about it. Like, we lived together in Puerto Rico, and we came up with these scenarios. What if, what if, what if? And I really believe that these what ifs make wrestling so much fun. And I really want your input, whether it's on Twitter at Steve Corino Show, whether it's on email with some detailed ones, stevecorinoshow@gmail.com. What we're going to do now is, you know, before, as we wrap up the segment and the show, I want to read some of the ones, and Dan's going to take his time to, or take his turn to, what you wrote about the Magnum TA thing. And now, all you guys that wrote, you know, you wrote basically in 140 characters. I want you to email. I want you to get it higher, 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 more, more, more. Intrigue. Look what I put out. I put out Magnum TA doesn't get into the car accident. The fucking Ultimate Warrior is actually Sting and not Jim Hellwig. Crazy, right? Okay, Kevin Sullivan Show at Sullivan Show S. Legit long-term competition to Flair, at least one NWA title run, and another player in the Monday Night Wars. I agree with you, except for the Monday Night Wars. I believe that it's country, baby. The NWA is all about the weekends and NASCAR. If you're on the Speed Channel, TBS, and TNT on Saturday morning, Saturday night, Sunday after the race. That's where you're at. Dan?
What if Magnum TA is the leader of the NWO? No, that's another that's another story altogether.
Those are the possibilities.
Right. Cody Mahan at CO Mahan writes, interesting question. No Nikita turn. Maybe Sting doesn't become face of the company, which is kind of going off of what your point was earlier, and Magnum versus the NWO. So kind of going the opposite of what I just said. Maybe Magnum is that, not necessarily Sting as the Crow, but Magnum is the one that's trying to take down this renegade organization.
Exactly. Could you imagine Magnum versus Hogan in 1996?
Oof.
Holy shit, right?
Yeah.
Maybe Jim Hellwig, the Ultimate Warrior, is a huge heel in 1996 against Sting, who is the Ultimate Warrior in WWF. That's so good. Marcus Gibbs at Mr. Gibbs at War writes, Lawler Magnum at Super Clash 3. At first I thought, he's just combining two of the ideas, but intriguing. Lawler's the AWA World Heavyweight Champion. Things are going okay for the AWA and World Class in Memphis. And Magnum might be the NWA champion at that time, or the big challenger for Jerry Lawler on this combined pay-per-view. Excellent. Excellent. Keep it coming.
Starcher Heisenberg at MMA Guru 74. He writes a little bit more. He goes, he would have won the belt from Flair at Starrcade 86, remained hot till 88, then probably would have booked or maybe tried turning heel. Couldn't see him going to Vince as he was a little bit too southern. Don't see him still around for Monday Night Wars, but who knows? He was around apparently during the time of, he was living in North Carolina at the time, so it was huge news when, of course, the accident occurred. But he goes on to say Nikita would have stayed heel and probably had even a better run. I don't think Nikita made a good face, just my opinion. I always think about what would have happened if you had an evil Nikita Koloff facing off against Hulk Hogan as opposed to a guy like an old timer like you know, Nikolai Volkov. You really, really tune up the violence in that USA versus Russia feud.
Absolutely. And it would have worked perfect. What would have happened if, you know, here's another quick one to keep in your mind. What if Dusty doesn't turn Nikita? And there's a tasteless storyline of Nikita's the reason that Magnum got into the accident. I mean, there is such so many ways to go. And I agree. Like, I liked Nikita as a babyface at the shock value of it. But long term, I didn't, because to me, it killed his scariness. And he was a scary dude, man. When 84, 85, or 86, he was big and jacked up and reckless. And I loved it. He was big. Hmm. Now, Robin Kurtz wrote, if Magnum TA had not been injured in a car wreck years ago, I believe Magnum would have been the heavyweight champion. Magnum TA would have went far in this business. I'm not sure of the impact it would have today, but I know the impact would have been back then. I agree. but still going with that country and rock and roll theory, I believe that Magnum TA is the leader of the country generation, whereas Hulk Hogan and Sting as the Ultimate Warrior, the leaders of the rock and roll era. WWF's still huge, but I don't think they draw in the South like they would in New York, in Los Angeles, in Philadelphia, in Baltimore, in Denver. There are so many different ways that you can go on this one.
All right, one last one on Magnum TA from our man Parwan Guman. He writes, "Hey Steve, loved your work back in ECW. We all do. Now to the question. He being Magnum TA, would have eventually been in the WWF, where Vince would have pushed him to the moon. But it didn't really matter if he went to WWF or stayed in the NWA. He was going to be the next big thing, as we mentioned before. His time was coming, and it's a shame that it didn't get a chance to fully shine. Thanks for reading."
Yeah, see, I disagree. Like, where, I believe that he would have stayed loyal to the NWA, and they would have been able to book around it. For all of Dusty's faults as a booker, he had so many pluses as a booker. And I believe if he is reined into whatever NASCAR is doing, wherever NASCAR is going, then he's going to concentrate on the Charlottes and Dallas and Tulsa and Tennessee and stuff like that. He's going to concentrate on the South, where he knows so much. And he'll really be able to get the most out of Magnum TA. Whereas heels like Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson still may take a shot at the WWF for a little bit, but eventually come home. I don't think you get the jumping as much as you get the longevity of, heels that will come and go and be off for a little bit. Maybe heel comes in for 6, 7, 8 months, and then he goes away for 6, 7, 8 months, and then comes back. He doesn't have to jump to the WWF for 3 years. There really could have been so many different ways. And, I think people, once they start listening, they're going to think, I don't know. I don't know about these what ifs and shit like that. But it really makes you think, and really, it's so, so much fun. And I want to thank everybody for thinking about this. And like I said, keep writing in. Give me your ideas at Steve Carino Show on Twitter. But the ones that I gave you 4 great ones. I thought it was 5, but I'm stupid. But it was 4. Give me your thoughts on them. Those are the ones that I want you to do. Write it down. Be as long as you want. You saw how long Cameron's was. I'm going to read it, especially when it's that freaking good. Give me your thoughts. Let's make this show interactive. We're going to every 2 weeks now. The more you make this show interactive, the better it's going to be. And more people are going to be tuning in, wanting to hear more, especially when we get guests on and we ask them, what if? What's your thought on this process? Hey, Dan, do we have some time for some Twitter Q&A and love?
Oh, I think so. Just because the show is changing doesn't mean we forget our roots there, Steve.
All right. Well, let's see. Hopefully they'll play us some music in here.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to hold my breath in 3, 2, 1.
The bow-legged one. Yeah. What's your name? Shoot. Damn, thing.
Man. I think when we take a week off, the music gets better.
Oh, yeah. Nothing like an old school jam for an old school show like this one.
Word up. Hey, here we go. Steve J. Rogers Jr., longtime listener, probably all 20 episodes, writes at Steve Carino Show, don't ask, ... But how soon can kendo sticks be shipped to New York City area from Emerald Isle, ... Hashtag, it's been that kind of day. Kind of frowny face. What are some of your least favorite weapons match? Steve, I don't think kendo sticks are made here in Emerald Isle. Only cool things are. So I don't know. I do have one kendo stick that Tiger Jet Singh gave me. It's might be in my storage closet, but yeah, I don't know. It's probably 3 days, 2 days. The mail system kind of sucks.
Steve, I never want to, find out for myself. You get this question a lot, I'm sure, but is there a type of weapon that's better on the body than, you know, I mean, it sounds like, obviously if you get slapped with a glove, it's an annoying pain, but like we saw with Stardust the other day, but, you know, a kendo stick versus a chair versus being whipped into stairs. I mean, you've probably taken all of them. So is there one that's better than any of the others?
There's not. You know, I was trying to think of it while I was reading that question. I said, man, what is the best one to take? And I'm thinking none of them are. Like, I've taken a shovel to the head. I've taken kendo stick. I've taken a barbed wire bat. I've taken, you know, the ladders. There's none that really make me go, yay.
What about getting thrown through a table? That's not fun at all?
Not fun at all. You know, yeah, in England last week, or the week before, I went through one, and I was like, oh, man, I forgot how much this shit hurts. Like, where's Kevin Kelly when I need him?
You're still going through tables to this very day?
Yeah, I did a TLC match, and I was thinking, like, oh, my goodness, like, when was the last time I did one of these?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the answer was, oh.
I'm at the point now where I'm playing with, you know, I have this little dog that, you know, you can hear every now and again on the show that will be messing around, and I'll take, like, a fake spill off the bed to get him to jump off the bed. And I sometimes now look at these spills like, how much longer do I have before this spill becomes something major? You know, like, how much longer before this becomes an emergency room trip and not just me just horse playing with the dog, you know? And you're going through tables.
Yeah. It was rough. It went through.
Got another question here from at Coffee Queen H. She goes, hi, Steve and Dan. When is the next ROH pay-per-view? I think she means, like, traditional pay-per-view, not the iPay-per-views. We enjoyed the last one so much. When I see streamers, I think about it. Steve, do you have any inside info on the next major pay-per-view for ROH?
I don't know for sure. I would, if I'm a betting man, I would imagine that final battle in New York City will be that guy. That will be the guy that we take as our next pay-per-view. I'm not really sure I liked it. I like traditional pay-per-view. I think their numbers were exactly what they were looking for, but it's pretty cool. So yeah, I would say look for it in December, but if not, try March when it's going to be for the anniversary show. So that'll be, that's my guess, but I don't know. Yeah, but yeah, it's a good question. We don't get that question much. But it was a very good question. Okay, finally, Matt Bishop, Fish Approved, says, Steve Curtis Show, love the interview with Cedric Alexander. Hope that guy has a bright future. Yeah, Cedric's a good dude, man. I love him. He's new PWF Heavyweight Champion, so that means he's got to come back and get my shitty paydays. I love him. He's just a really, real good guy, real, you know, asset to the business. And he's going to be, you know, somebody that I think that people will really get into in time. It takes a while, especially when you're in a tag team for so long. But it's good, man. He's a good guy. Hey, this weekend I will be, by the time you read this, I will be on my way to England for WAW Wrestling Friday night, and then Saturday night at Epic Studios in Norwich. WAW, for all you WWE fans, is owned by the Knights. And the Knights are the parents of WWE superstar Paige. They run some great shows. I love working for them. I'm going to be there in Norwich at Epic Studios. It's like, man, it's a lot of atmosphere. On Sunday, I'll be AWW in England for their 12th anniversary show. You can go to worldofcarino.com and see where my schedule is and come on out. Man, I only got so many t-shirts left. We got to get this shit going. Follow me on Twitter, at King Carino. Follow the PWF on Twitter, at PWF Legacy. And make sure you get to the website, ProWrestlingPWF.com. Dan, plug it, baby.
Well, there's a wrestling promotion coming to my area, too. I'm not sure if I'm going to be going to it yet. It's at the Hudson Elks home. It's called Lucky Pro Wrestling. I might be checking them out. It's kind of a game time decision there. Otherwise, I'm probably just going to catch up on some movies because I haven't. There's so many things. I work with a group of med students, and they're all talking about these movies that I haven't even seen yet. So Might have to do that, but might check out the local product as well. If you want to check out any of my writings on placetobenation.com, I do the weekly Raw recap every Monday night into Tuesday morning, sometimes depending upon how the show goes. Just put one up, of course, if you haven't, or if you haven't watched Raw and you need to catch up or just need something amusing to pass the time. I got 3,000 words for you each and every week, so check that out as well at Place to Be Nation. You can follow me on Twitter, as so few of you do. It's at dmcg4881. I actually just got, Steve, you'll be proud of me, I just got a Nikki Bella fan site following me now on Twitter. Clearly, they don't.
Nice.
Yeah, clearly they don't read my Raw recap, because I'm usually bashing the Bellas and Total Divas, but... you know, I'll take all comers, the few, the proud, the my Twitter following. And, of course, always check us out, placetobenation.com. Support us by clicking on that Amazon link. Every time you make a purchase, Amazon throws back a few, as Stone Cold would say, ducats to help support these podcasts that we put on for you each week for free. So, you know, it's always a good time. There's always something for everybody on placetobenation.com. Steve.
Hey, it's been a fun episode. I'm glad to be back. We'll see you here in 2 weeks. It'll be October. We'll talk playoffs. We'll talk maybe how many more people have gotten arrested. There's going to be so much. And we're going to read some of your what-ifs during the Twitter Q&A and love, so make sure you get them. I want to thank everybody. Thank Dan, my man that really puts in all the hard work. And we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thank you for listening to the Steve Corino Show.
Thank you for listening to the Steve Corino Show. Download the new episode every Friday at placetobenation.com.
See the road that they walk on is paved in gold. It's always summer.